when I'm driving south, I literally feel like I'm going downhill the entire time. Is that
what?
Is
no,
that just
real.
The dumbest? Is that the dumbest too. Thing ever? Like, and I,
you're listening to Deeper Magic.
Everyone, welcome back to the Deeper Magic. I am Peter here with Logan Liliana. Logan Liliana, am I saying that right, Logan?
That's all three of our names. That's, in a
sure
way
is.
Too fast way.
Okay. Hi, Lily. It's good to see you again.
Hi, good to see you, Peter.
And Anna here once again. And hey. We let these two hooligans in on this podcast, Lily and Logan. This
I
is
feel
episode...
like the three of us let you in on this podcast.
That feels more accurate. Yeah.
All right. So I have to admit, I'm struggling a little bit right now in this episode. Has anybody else ever fallen down the stairs? Because here's the
yeah.
background.
When I was a child.
Hey, listen.
No, you don't understand.
Better be careful right now.
Yeah. Because at the time of this recording, it's never going to be spring. And so we woke up to snow and to ice. I didn't see it coming. I thought our outside steps definitely were clear of snow and ice. They just looked a little bit wet. And when you fall unanticipatedly, you're on the ground before you even know it. Like, you're upright 1 second, you're on the ground the next. I can verify, there's things that go through your head that probably shouldn't be spoken out loud in that very limited time that it happens. And being the agile, athletic gamer that I am, I popped right back up.
Right.
As you might imagine. And so, but this is, I'm going to bring Anna into the story now, too, because the context was, it was quite early on a Sunday morning. I was doing the sermon in our local church, and I go out to the car usually to practice reading through the sermon so nobody else can hear me, just so I get familiar with it. So I was on my way out to the car, wiped out with the sermon papers, wiped out, clothes were all wet, still sat in the car.
Did they go up in the air like a college professor in a movie?
I really hope they did.
I mean, no, because I'm such a gamer, I held on to them. Like, I was protecting them with my life.
I think you're using gamer wrong.
I don't think you know what gamer means.
The sacred papers that I had written. Are you? So wait, no, you're... You're saying
we can't
I'm using gamer
do that.
Wrong.
We can't do that tangent right you, now. We can't.
I have to. I have to for
but
a
I'm
moment.
But I'm such a gamer.
You, oh God.
You meaning said that I stay upright even when I am hurt.
Not even
not
close.
What it means to be a gamer.
Are you using gamer as a synonym to athlete?
An athlete who is injured but still persists forward because of their
no,
internal
no,
fortitude.
No, Peter. In 2025, gamer means person who plays video games, sits at their computer, and has zero athletic ability.
You can understand the difference.
Yeah, there is a bit of dissonance between those two terms.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are going to go to old man segment here in just a little bit. But I did go ahead, and so I wiped out. But the best, and I'm sorry, Anna, the best part of the story is I was still pretty bitter while I was trying to talk through the sermon, sitting in the Jeep, looking outside. I'm probably 7 minutes into the sermon, and all of a sudden I see another body come ripping down the stairs. And so, Anna, take us into your journey of this experience.
I'm running out the door because I'm on my way to work. I'm running late. I just clocked. Oh, there's probably going to be ice on my car because it was raining last night. I look to my right and I see the headlights of the car on and I go, oh, that's weird. And then I'm on the ground. And that is my like only frame of reference for what is happening. I'm sitting there and the only thing happening in my head is I really hope that my mom is not sitting in that car right now because she's going to be like, oh, are you okay? We have to get you inside. And I don't have time for that. I have to get to work.
Yeah.
And so I'm really hoping that nobody saw what just happened. And then I hear from the car, are you okay? And I was like, oh, for the love of God. And so I get up and I'm disoriented. I don't know what's going on. I'm like, I think I'm fine. I think I'm uninjured. The adrenaline is going. I'm late to work. So I'm going to figure out whether or not I'm fine once I actually get to work.
As is healthy.
As is healthy. And you're sitting in the car and you're like, yeah, I absolutely wiped out.
Yes.
Like 15 minutes ago. Here we are. And then we're sitting here. We're talking about it later this afternoon. And Samuel, my younger brother, comes downstairs and is like, I was warned about that this morning. And then proceeded to also wipe out immediately
downstairs.
After.
Wow. It's a family full of gamers.
A family full of gamers.
We were just totally.
A family full of gamers.
I mean, the fact that I can, and my only residual effect from it, and the fact that I can do this podcast just demonstrates my gaminess.
Wow.
I have a very uncomfortable abrasion on my middle toe on my left foot. Have you ever had an abrasion on your toe? Because I have one right now, and I'm just going to say it hurts, but just given the professionalism with which I carry myself, wow. This podcast is
no trouble. You chose
to whine
that's about
big.
It being on recording.
No, he's going through a lot right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, he really is.
I'd like to nominate the title for this episode be Suddenly Horizontal. Just came to
that
me.
That 100% describes my experience.
Well,
Lily.
And if we're talking about an element of mystery today, then the idea of I'm living my life and suddenly I'm on the ground. around, there is an element of mystery in
so
that.
So true.
That's a professional transition right there.
There you go.
How are you going to follow that up?
Well, by saying that we're not going there quite yet.
Oh.
Because we still have the old man episode, or the old man segment that we said we were going
to do. You're going to disregard my wonderful transition. You're going to edit out all of my swear words in previous recordings.
You're still mad about that.
I am.
Did you swear in your head when you went down the stairs today? Because I'm sure I
swore out loud. I don't know if you heard me or not.
I couldn't hear you over the Jeep, I don't think. So.
No, but we were talking about earlier, this was the thing that I wanted to bring up prior to recording, is that I found out months into you and I recording Deeper Magic, just the two of us, that not only had you told me it was okay if I have little baby swears on the podcast, you then went behind my back to our editors and had them cut them all out without telling me, and then continued to tell me that it was okay for me to swear on the podcast.
If it makes you feel better, I'll let you let out a really big swear right now that I'll cut later.
Oh, do it.
Ooh.
Do it.
Can no, I'm going to save it. I'm going to save it for later.
I can bleep it.
Okay, actually, we
because
do.
Because now it's an element of mystery. You don't know when I'm going to do it, but you know I'm going
it's
to
coming.
At some point.
It's like
such a
sometimes.
Bro.
Once again.
It's one of my favorite elements of R-rated movies is they're allowed a certain number of the F-bomb or a certain word, and you never know what's going to come, but they're allowed like one.
I get it with like, the PG-13 where you're like, are you going to do it or not? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay, so we are going to be talking about mystery today. Mystery in relationships, mystery in faith, mystery in a lot of different ways. But I do love the idea. I'm very supportive of you finding some sort of bleep out button. But it can't just be, and I'm looking at Logan right now. It can't just be like bleep. It has to be like some sort of sound effect that bleeps out Anna's.
I don't know if I'm
cursing.
Creative enough to do that.
Can it be my dad saying some sort of Jesus phrase of some
ooh,
kind?
I like
yeah,
that.
What's the Deeper Magic explanation that you have? Isn't there a button? That's like 30 seconds long.
Yeah.
Well, that was actually, that was from season one, and mm-hmm. It was a definition of the church.
Yeah.
Maybe that's kind of long for this one, though.
But I'll speed it up so it's like 2 seconds long.
So it's like the
that's
disclaimers
really
on
funny.
Pharmaceutical advertisements.
And
yes.
If you hear that, Anna will have said a curse word.
Okay, that's perfect. I love it. At my age, the mind starts playing tricks. So,
that's only the cat.
Oh, where were we? So, as the gamer that I am, and being quite relevant as you know that I am, there's a series of things that were certainly part of my life as part of old man segment here. Because the purpose of the segment is you're older than 12, right? The three of you?
I would hope so.
I can confirm.
Okay, so each of you.
I'm older than 12, but I'm flattered that my skincare routine is working.
Okay, so I'm going to guess there's things that were part of my life that are no longer part of your life. Okay? So, Lily, let's start with you. Number one, you were bringing up a fax as part of our pre-show.
Anna brought it up. I was the one who brought up the fax.
If you had to send a fax, Lily, number one, would you know how to do it? Or number two, would you even know where to go to find out further information about a fax?
I mean, I'm familiar with it in the context of the TV show The Office.
Okay.
There's a lot of faxing that happens in the early seasons of that show.
When did that come out?
2004? Something like that.
So
early
that's
2000s.
Actually not that long ago. That fax was...
No, but in 2004, I had not yet started kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. We understand the concept of a fax machine, but I had, at the time, my first office-setting job, there was a fax machine attached to the printer or near the printer that sat in the middle of a cubicle of four of us, and one day it went off and it scared everyone.
So it still is a thing.
They do still exist.
I think it was spam. I think someone found a way to send a spam fax.
Oh, well, that's legendary.
And Anna, you brought it up because... we have some funding for Deeper Magic that mm-hmm. we're waiting to disperse, but we need to get our official nonprofit status. But as it turns out, and you can tell the story from here, faxing was still relevant in a certain segment of our society.
Well, specifically the IRS.
The IRS.
Which is, that makes sense, that the only way that you can contact the IRS is through snail mail or faxing. Mm. And so I could not recognize a fax machine on site, nor could I operate one, but I can tell you where to find one, and that is a U.S. Postal Office.
Well, together we could...
Between the two of us, we could
we
send
might
a
need
fax.
Logan as well.
Mm-hmm.
Between the two of us,
we could find and identify a fax machine,
and Logan could probably figure out how to use it.
Could you help us operate it?
I could surely give it a try.
How many
Gen Z/millennials
does it take to send a fax?
You know, that's a great question.
Minimum
great
three.
Question. Minimum three.
At least one of them has to be a guy because a fax machine is so old, it goes back to a time where the man had to do something for the women.
Where the women weren't allowed to use technology in case it led them astray.
This is why women need men. It's for faxes.
Fax machine.
It's for faxing.
That's how old they are.
Wow. Well, at least we still have some utility here, Logan. So, yeah, amazing.
Oh, my God.
All right, so here's my next question, a two of three. If you had to get to an unknown place, mm-hmm. it was a mystery about how to get there. If you had to get to some unknown place, would you be able to get there with a paper map?
Yes.
You would?
No.
Okay, Logan, let's start with you. Well, first of all, do you have a car?
Yes, I have a Wisconsin and a Minnesota road map in my car in case of emergencies.
You do? Okay, and Lily?
I do not have physical maps in my car, but on many a road trip growing up, as the eldest daughter in my family, I was tasked mm-hmm. with getting out the map and trying to find where we were going.
Okay.
And
so
give directions to whatever parent was driving.
And I'll say, in the modern day, to use the proper word of gamer or game player, there's a lot of maps in video games. And there's a lot of reading it and navigating it that you have to do.
That's fair.
That applies pretty well when you pull up a roadmap.
Okay. Anna, do you have a map in your car?
I do not have a map in my car. I will say, when I was doing driver's ed, Mom did make me do a map of like the major highways and freeways in Minnesota. Mm. I do not have any memory of that. Like, I know Classic. That I did it, but I couldn't tell you. The thing, I never had to learn how to read physical maps. That was not something that I was taught how to do. I could probably figure it out if I really, really had to. But on top of that, I'm also deeply directionally challenged. And so even in the idea of, like, I can be very familiar with a place that I am or a city where I'm in or, like, that sort of thing. And then you ask me to get somewhere that I have never been before and I'm like, nope. I will never find it. And the video game maps thing is not helpful to me at all because I play Baldur's Gate with my older brother. And it isn't until I've been doing my solo playthrough that I've had to figure out how to do the map in Baldur's Gate. But for the longest time, it would be me going, I don't understand how to get where you are, and then disconnecting my controller so that I become an NPC, letting my NPC get to where he is, and then reconnecting because I'm that directionally hopeless.
I think it's much more of a person-to-person thing than a generational thing.
It really
just
is.
Directional awareness.
That's what I was going to ask you. Lily and Logan, do you know at any given moment if you're going north or south or east or west?
I can tell you where north is right now.
You can.
Oh, okay. What? That's better than me. I would say I would not call myself directionally challenged.
Yeah.
And my husband does from time to time like test me if I drive somewhere and my default if it's a new place is to pull up the maps on the way home mm-hmm. to figure out, you know, the quickest way to get back home. And he turns it off and he says, no, drive.
Really? So you have to figure
out. I have to figure out and remember and recall it, which is probably really healthy for my brain mm-hmm. ultimately. So yeah. I'm not that mad about it, but.
This is so dumb. I can't believe I'm going to say this. I still to this day, because I have a pretty good sense of direction. I, like you, Logan, could tell you what is north, south, east, west mm-hmm. right now. When I'm driving south, I literally feel like I'm going downhill the entire time. Is that the dumbest thing ever?
That's me too.
It has never, ever been different. Every time I go south, I'm like, it's downhill.
It does not matter what side of the road I'm actually, like, if I am going west, my brain tells me that I'm going left. And if I'm going east, my brain tells me that I'm going right.
Well, I just...
That one I agree with much more.
But
north is up and south is down.
Yeah, that's just it. North is up on a map
yes,
and south is down.
It's
so when I'm traveling
so
south,
I'm going downhill.
Not an elevation.
But in my mind...
But are you saying that if you're driving and you... Hypothetically, you're somewhere you've never driven before you don't know which direction you're going, you would feel like, oh, I think I might be going south because I'm going downhill.
Peter drives up to Duluth and says, man, the air is getting so thin up here.
Because honestly, driving north feels like a chore. I feel like I'm driving uphill the entire time.
Wait, but you're not the one working. It's your car. I'm so confused.
Well, I'm sure my car gets better gas mileage because it coasts every time I'm driving south. But north, it just struggles, Lily.
I don't know if this is like a parent-child or like a neurodivergent thing or what's happening here, but I'm understanding every word you're saying.
Thank you.
Right now.
I couldn't be more confused.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's number three of three. And this is where, I don't know. I'll ask the question. I have a prediction in my mind right now. And so I'm not going to predict ahead of time. But if you didn't have the internet, where would you go for information?
The library.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
That's a good answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I'm so impressed. My prediction in my mind was that you would go glazed-eyed and not have any idea.
I love the library. I go to the library like once a week.
So
I love
the library still is a thing.
Oh, yeah. I have found out that many public libraries will allow you to rent books on your Kindle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so you don't have to get a physical book from the library, but you can go sign up for the program, rent the digital book.
Okay.
And so I can use my Kindle while reading books and not have to pay for them, just like you would at a library.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, well, I rent books from the library basically every month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, and growing up being homeschooled, when I didn't want to be in the house for the 18th day in a row, mm-hmm. I would bike to the library in Hopkins or Excelsior or wherever we were living at the time, and I would spend all day there, and I would bring stacks and stacks of books home. Do you not remember this?
Well, sort of.
This was great. Like, I genuinely would come home from the library with 20 library books in my backpack.
But that was still, like, 15 years ago. I'm a little surprised that libraries are still a thing. Logan, if you had to meet somebody between a bar, a library, or a club, where would you feel like this is the person I want to meet?
Can
do I want to meet him in a bar,
categories?
A library?
What's
or
the
a
context
club?
Of this?
Well, I'm just thinking
romantically.
Romantically. Oh. Like if you're looking for somebody to date, would you rather have met them in a library?
Library is the best story for sure. If you meet someone at a library,
I need to know, do you mean the 20-year-old version of a club or the 50-year-old man version of a club?
You're talking the golf club or the dance club?
What kind of club?
Because if we're talking a dance club, can I alter the categories to bar, coffee shop, or library?
Mm.
Well, that would be fine. I actually did mean dance club.
Okay.
Am I looking for my wife?
Okay, looking for your...
That's a really good follow-up question.
You're looking for your life. You're looking for your wife.
Well, if she's my
Logan.
Wife, she will be.
He gets it.
Library, coffee shop, bar.
If it's the wife you were looking for, it's the library.
Really? Mm-hmm. Why? What is your instinct about the library being a reliable place?
I mean, it's a wonderful place of storytelling, information, of people gathering to do community events. I mean, libraries are a huge part of your community. Okay. And so just getting someone who's there for whatever they're there for, it's intellectual and a great conversation. They're going to be someone I can hold a great conversation with for a long period of time.
Okay, Anna, coffee shop, bar, library.
I work in a coffee shop, so I'm not going to say coffee shop because that feels like inviting ideas into the universe that I don't want to manifest.
but
the library would definitely be my answer as well for very similar reasons. I would say information, storytelling, that sort of thing. If somebody is going to a library, they are going there, again, to either participate in a community or find something worthwhile to read or learn something about the world. And like that is the kind of person that I would like to be with. I would say library. I also feel like as I work at a cafe bookstore,
mm-hmm.
and so libraries are a topic of conversation in the bookstore that I work in consistently as well, where the idea of like libraries are dying and people aren't going there anymore, and how do we help support them? And so we have programs at our coffee shop that are meant to also help support local libraries.
Yeah.
And so then it's also somebody who is communally conscious in a different sort of sense. It's not just I'm going to a neutral third location. It's I'm actively choosing to support this thing that not many people are supporting anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so Lily, so you and your hubby go out and he takes you for a date to send a fax to start with, since he knows how to do that.
Yes.
And then
after
that,
he's so much older than me.
Without a map.
So much older than you. So without a map, you send your fax. Now you're like, hey, let's go out for a romantic date. Would you and your husband pick library, coffee shop, bar?
I would never go to a library with my husband.
You would not?
Wow.
No.
You seem very definitive about that.
He's not a reader.
Okay, well, that would be a barrier.
So for him, it's maybe not going to be his favorite place. So it wouldn't be enjoyable for both of us. So mm-hmm. not a great date location. Also he loves to distract me while I read. So
he's one of them.
So for date purposes,
you say
I'm
as
picking...
though you're not also one of them.
I literally have nothing to say right now. Continue, Lily.
For date purposes, I'm picking a bar because we would like laugh and talk and hang out and connect. Also, if I go to either, whether it's a library or a coffee shop, my sole purpose in being there is to read. Mm-hmm. So
got it.
Either place, not great for a date spot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. I think I would choose a bar with Hallie, too, because we really actually, there's a spot in town close to where we live that we go fairly regularly. And now, see, this will be the segue back into mystery here, Anna.
Because my segues weren't good enough?
No, right. they're wonderful. It just wasn't. Time.
Thank you for your support, Logan, during this trying time.
Logan is very supportive of you right now, for sure. Mm-hmm. But we've developed a friendship with the bartender, and she knows our basic like base alcohol that we like. Mm-hmm. And for me, I like a drink with either bourbon or scotch whiskey as part of the base. And then from there, she just mixes it up. And it's off the menu. We don't know what's coming. So we actually really enjoy the process with her. She gets to experiment as a bartender. I mean, Logan, you've been a bartender. You mm-hmm. still are a bartender.
Yep, absolutely.
Right. And so we just ask her to mix us up a drink. And it is this mystery drink that shows up that's really fun. And we just have a great time for the next 15, 20 minutes. She'll often sit down with us. We'll talk it all through. And I love that version. I mean, libraries would be really fun, too. Coffee shops seem kind of boring somehow.
I would rank it bar, then coffee shop, then library.
Yeah.
Mostly because I just fear that Corey would be far too loud for a library. Coffee shop,
and I say this with all the love in my heart for Corey, but
I can see that. I can totally see that.
Yeah, you all get it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Anna, I'm going to just chuck it over to you. We have our topic of mystery. What are we talking about here today?
That was so unfair. You didn't give me any preparation for that.
Yeah, but you know, I've watched you just pivot right into conversations just like
okay,
that.
Well, on the idea of going to a bar, having somebody mix up just a random drink and just see what happens, one of my favorite spots genuinely in the whole world, and I'm so sad that it closed last New Year's because the owners were renovating the building, but there's a bar in Scotland. It was called Hoot the Redeemer. It was wonderful, and my college friends and I would go there almost every week. And one of my friends was really good friends with all of the bartenders there. And so we would go in and we'd be like, all right, make us some drinks. And they're like, what do you want? And we're like, surprise us. And it was one of those things where we would watch other customers say something similar. And the reaction from behind the bar was always, I can't deal with this tonight. This is so upsetting. Just tell me what you want to drink. I don't want to have to guess this, all of that. Right. My friends and I would come in, we would be like, I want a drink that reminds you of this song. And they all were like so excited about it. Mm-hmm. They would come in, they would be creative, they would throw things together. It was the community aspect of it and also the excitement of I'm giving you total free reign about whatever drink you're about to hand to me. And I know that every time it's going to be amazing. And so that element of mystery and fun and excitement and creativity and community all put together was really wonderful. And it was one of the things that I loved so deeply about Hoot and one of the reasons why I'm so sad that it is no longer there.
Yeah. So that really gets us into the topic, I think, nicely. And mystery is, I think, one of those things, whether it be in relationships that we have, whether it be in our faith journey, whether it just be life in general. We really want it on one level, but I think we're terrified by it on another level. So we live in these weird paradoxes of, I don't want any mystery in my life, but if I don't have mystery in my life, then I'm bored. Mm-hmm. And Logan, you actually had a pretty good – you were a theater kid.
I was, yeah.
So, and I have seen some theater recently, and I literally was sitting there. It was Phantom of the Opera, and I'm thinking, this guy, who's the lead role in Phantom of the Opera, is doing this night in and night out. And it was West End London, so it was one of the most prestigious roles you could possibly have. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, this guy has probably worked most of his life to get to this role, the pinnacle role as Phantom on West End in London. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking he's doing this thing 7-8 days a week. There's no way he's not bored at this point in time because it's over and over again. But you talked a little bit about this in terms of the mystery of opening night versus when you're at it for a bit.
There's so much, obviously, anticipation and excitement, but also fear, worry. There's a lot of emotions that come with opening night of theater. You've done this thing that you're prepared for. You've done as much as you can to be in control of what the night is going to be. But is everyone going to hit their marks right? Is everyone going to remember their lines? Is the audience going to laugh at these jokes that we think they should laugh at? Are they going to react differently in all these different places? There's a mystery to it, which makes it so exciting. You want it to go perfectly. You have the plan. But the mystery just makes the adrenaline in the room go to the max. As you go through your performances, the first weekend, the second, the third, that starts to go away. The mystery of the night is no longer there. Sometimes some elements get thrown in. Oh, a middle school is coming to see the play. Oh, what is it like performing for kids instead of a group of adults? There's some mystery here. But I did a show that once put on 26 performances. It was a Christmas show through the month of December. And let me tell you, by number 26, it was not as fun to do. There wasn't an excitement or a mystery to what the night was going to be. We knew what it was going to be. We've done it 25 times before, and it became dull. As fun as it was, the music, the singing, the lines, love doing theater, the difference between night one and night 26 was so drastic.
Lily, you were talking about going to restaurants. Mm-hmm. So let me just ask you, when you are going to a new restaurant, do you look at the menu beforehand or do you not? And the same question applies to maybe going to a movie. Do you watch trailers and spoilers or do you not?
I love looking at a menu before I'm going to try a new restaurant.
You do.
But I am desperately aching to curb my obsession with studying a menu because of what I've read about the health benefits for our brains in having a sense of mystery. Even something as small as showing up at a new restaurant, you know generally what type of cuisine it's going to be, and you have no clue what's going to be on the menu when you get there. Like that, it sparks this little bit of dopamine that is like so healthy and good for your brain. So I'm desperately trying to get better. I'm not great at it yet because I just love seeing a menu and like I'm so excited to go to the restaurant, but I do understand how it like it does kind of take away from that experience of being there for the first time. If I know what I'm going to see, then like it's not as fun of an experience once you're there, even though the lead up feels like, oh, I'm so excited to try this drink or eat this thing or whatever, see what they have for dessert. But it's like, no, I want to do that less.
Will you read reviews going into it as well about the restaurant?
Oh, no.
You don't?
No.
I think reviews just ruin any of those sorts of experiences.
Yeah. If I'm going to have a, if I'm going to have a bad experience at a restaurant, like I want to have a really authentic bad experience there, you know, if the food sucks, I want to find out for myself.
I love that you said movie trailers too, because I love watching movie trailers.
Do you really?
I love it because there's an art form to it that has so recently started to disappear. Movie trailers, movie production studios are so caught on bringing people into the theater. They want to put all the best stuff in the trailer so you see all the things that interest you. And then there's no surprise to the movie.
I hate that.
The most iconic example is Star Wars Episode One.
Oh, yes. Don't even get me started with Star Wars.
Darth Maul
had
a two-sided lightsaber that they showed in the trailer.
What?
And blew our mind.
It was, I forget who it was, one of the studio heads, someone was arguing vehemently to say, no one has ever, Star Wars is the biggest thing ever. The episodes 4, 5, and 6 came out. It's a phenomenon. We're bringing it back. Let's make this be a surprise. Those doors open and you see someone with one lightsaber. Oh, it has a second side. The reactions would have been amazing. We all knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Because there was no surprise. You put it in the trailer.
Maybe I'm watching the wrong like movie. I feel like any movie trailer I've ever watched is straight vibes.
Yeah, that's actually so true.
Like I don't. Maybe I'm just watching better movies.
Oh. Wow.
With better trailers and art directors who are directing those trailers. But
and Anna, you were agreeing with this. What do we mean by trailers with vibes? I think I'm lost here.
I feel like 9 times out of 10 when I watch a movie trailer, I walk away not knowing anything about what's going to happen in that movie, but it looks cool. I saw the trailer for Challengers.
Yeah.
And then I was like, there's tennis. That's basically all
I
know.
In fairness, do you know anything about Challengers having actually watched
Challengers? Well, no, but see, this is what I'm saying about maybe we just watch better movies.
That was the one with,
it's about vibes.
Not Shakira. What's her name? That Mary Jane.
That was wild.
Zendaya. I knew it wasn't Shakira. I was pretty sure it wasn't that. So, okay.
No, that's why I
see where the thread came from in his brain.
Thank you. Thanks, Logan.
That was crazy. Yeah, that was crazy. I will say, I was thinking about it though in the idea of like looking at menus before you get to a restaurant, and the thing that I'm realizing as we're having this conversation that I am really guilty of is when I'm reading a book or watching a show and I really want to know what's going on and I feel like they're dragging it out longer than it needs to go, I am the person who will Google what's happening. And that did originate for me when I was watching Game of Thrones and Walking Dead with my brother, because when there was a lot going on or things would get really intense or really violent or really scary or whatever, and we didn't want to actually have to watch what was about to happen, we would look up what is happening in this episode and then skip what we wanted to skip so that we didn't have to see horrifying graphic violence and things like that. But now I've gotten used to that as an accessible option to me. Mm-hmm. And so now when I'm watching a normal show that I don't need to skip anything super terrible, super graphic, super disturbing, whatever, my instinct when I feel like I'm not getting the plot reveal that I want quickly enough.
Yeah.
And I have a fair tolerance for that as somebody who reads a lot and consumes a lot of media. But if I feel like it's too slow paced, I will Google what is going on here because I want to know.
There's a meme going around right now about boyfriends or husbands who have to be prepared to give a little mini recap at the end or middle of an episode of a show like, say, White Lotus, mm-hmm. where their female partners are like scrolling.
Is Shakira in that one?
Oh my
gosh. Continue.
Where their female partners like take they pull out their phones like mid episode and are, you know, scrolling, doing something completely different. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then 10 minutes later, they're like, okay, wait, what happened while I wasn't watching or whatever? And
this is real.
This is real. This is a phenomenon that is so common that there are videos and content that go viral on social media.
I call those people ex-girlfriends. I don't watch movies.
And this is so funny to me to hear you say that, because the reverse of that is the dynamic when my father and I are watching shows. We sit down, we watch the recap of whatever episode happened right before, and he goes, when did any of this happen? And I was like, the episode that we watched 20 minutes ago.
That might
what
be
are
more
you
of an
talking
age
about?
Thing than an attention.
Well, it's that, but also like on your computer, yes. or you fall asleep or
yeah,
something.
Sure.
And so then you wake up and you're like, how did we get to this plot point? And I'm like, they introduced it 30 seconds ago.
Well,
I also don't know what's going
on. I can watch the same
on.
Season over and over again and be surprised.
It's wonderful.
Which is fun.
It's really
but
great.
I can't believe that this is a thing though going. So you're saying that, generally speaking, women might be distracted on their phones or not paying attention or something happens and they have to get the recap from whoever they're watching with?
Yeah. I mean, and I just think like there is some tie to like, oh, if it's not moving quickly enough, mm-hmm. if I feel bored, then I'm going to check out and I'm going to pick up whatever other device is in the room with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then, oh, I need to get caught up 10 minutes later because mm-hmm. something did happen while I was checked out.
Yeah. Hmm.
Okay. So Lily, you mentioned some of the maybe benefits in a study about what you've read mm-hmm. related to mystery. But before we, because we'll take the next sort of step here. This one seems fairly straightforward to say, do we like mystery in our life or do we not when it comes to trailers and menus? So let me start with Logan. Logan, would you prefer to have mystery with menus and trailers, or would you prefer to know all of what's going to happen ahead of time?
Oh, I'd love to have the mystery in that.
Okay, Lily.
Same.
Okay, Anna?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in the same spot. Okay, and let's take it to relationships next.
Now ask me if I want mystery in my life.
Okay, that is 100% where we're going. But Lily, why don't you tell us a little bit about the study that you had looked at and as a reference point for understanding the benefits of mystery?
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of mentioned already, basically, when your brain experiences something that it wasn't expecting, again, in a positive framework, there is a rush of dopamine that goes to your brain. So it, like, happy chemical, makes you feel joy, makes you feel excitable, makes you feel excited to have more experiences like that. It starts forming those pathways and grooves in your brain. So, yeah, it seems like it's this little thing that I think a lot of us, myself included, with the restaurant menu searching, we're trying to resist anxiety. I need to know what's going to happen. I don't want to feel anxious about it. But in doing that, we're actually depriving ourselves of even these small little moments where we could experience a little bit of like wonder and curiosity and mystery from something as innocent and harmless as I don't know what the cocktail options are going to be at this restaurant that I visit, and being surprised by that. But then it continues to enforce that. And I can say from my own experience, as I am on this journey of trying to look at fewer restaurant menus before I walk in the doors of a restaurant, when I do it and I'm pleasantly surprised, I'm more excited about doing it again.
Okay. So I can think of a couple different places we can go next then with this. And Logan, you brought up life. I had in my mind relationships. They're intertwined, but they are different from one another. Do we want to take a little vote about which category? Because we have life, we have relationships, and we have faith. And we'll finish with mystery and our faith. But do you want to go, and maybe this would just be a one-person vote. Logan, I'll let you have the vote. Are we going to life or relationships next when it comes to mystery?
I like life.
Life. And so what we're talking about here is no matter what we think might happen in our lives, we actually really don't know what's going to happen in our lives. That would be too far afield. I'm thinking we could probably all think of experiences we've had in our life that we would have never anticipated a year prior, 5 years prior, 1 month prior. So life is filled with unexpected experiences. I can start with that. I feel a ton of anxiety, typically speaking, about the mystery of what's going to happen in the future. And so I spend a lot of my day trying to almost manipulate the circumstances in such a way to eliminate the variables that might happen in the future that would otherwise surprise me. So I'm with you. I love the mystery of a good restaurant experience or of a trailer in a movie. I do not like not knowing what's going to happen in my life. It makes me feel anxious, except in some circumstances where I feel like I'm a little bit more in control, maybe traveling or something like that. But I don't know. And why don't I start with you? How do you feel about the lovely unknown of life?
Honestly, I feel like I'm maybe the wrong person to start with this answer, because I know you said we're not going to mystery and faith yet.
Sure.
The area where I really struggle with mystery is the little day-to-day things. I don't look at menus necessarily before I go to a restaurant, but I am the person that every time I go somewhere, if I see something familiar that I recognize, I will order that thing every single time. Mm. I will not try something new. I will, unless I have to. Or unless I'm feeling particularly brave in an evening. But I don't often listen to new music. Like, it takes me a long time to get into new music. I have to microdose new music before I can really, I have to put it in my playlist, and then it shows up and I go, oh, what is this song? And then I don't think about it again for 3 weeks.
I'm so overly critical of if a new album someone recommends to me, I listen to the first song and say, this better be good right away or I want to listen to what I like.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't listen to new music on purpose. I have to be tricked into it. I won't try new foods. I have to be forced into it, that sort of thing. I don't like not knowing where I'm going or how I'm getting home or what time things are happening or what's going to happen in the show or the book or the movie that I'm watching. Those are the areas where I really, really struggle with mystery. On a larger scale, in terms of life, I struggle with it more in relationships, and we can talk about that more in a minute. But in terms of life things, as I think is the journey that most people who go through the college years experience, I am now very, very deeply aware of the fact that I have no idea what is going to happen in my life or how things are going to turn out. And my life now looks incredibly different than I thought it was going to, even when I was in high school 8 years ago. Like, I just had a conversation with somebody about this the other day, where if you told 16-year-old Anna that in 7 years, she was going to be leading Bible studies and asking about auditing a Hebrew class and thinking about getting a master's in divinity and all of these things, 16-year-old Anna would have been like, what the f*** are you talking about? There's your swear word. Happy mystery.
That's how we get from G-rated to R-rated in just one fell swoop.
And there you go. Technically PG-13.
Okay, fair enough.
But it was one of those things where I, at 16, not being part of the church, not having interest in religion, believing in God but not having any relationship with God, never would have thought that I would be here. And that is only 7 years removed, with very limited knowledge of life and the world, very little life experience at this point. And so my approach to mystery in life is the idea of, well, I don't know what's going to happen, so I'm going to enjoy what I have right now, and that's going to be great. And if it sticks around, wonderful. If it doesn't, it was wonderful while it lasted. And we're just going to see what happens next. And that very much ties into how I approach mystery in my faith as well. The phrase that I've used around it is with confidence and open hands. But I do not like mystery in my little day-to-day things. So that's where I really struggle with it. Yeah.
Well, let's merge this together for you two, Logan and Lily. Let's even just do life and relationships, and then we'll finish with faith, with where Anna was. How do you feel about mystery? Logan, you've got something to say.
I'll flip it right on its head.
Sure.
Mystery in the greater span of life is, at least has been lately, terrifying. I had a great path for my life that I thought was where it was going to go. Plan was set. Things were good. That got upended all of a sudden. And in the last 3 to 4 years, there has been a lot of mystery about what's next. And there's been a lot of anxiety with it. You know, I'm happy to try new things every day. I'm a wide breadth of a person. There's so many things I can go do, stuff I can experience. But the overall direction of life was very mysterious and a lot of concerning. Just like with a lot of things in life, I think there's a great balance. You want to have mystery and experience, but you want to have a level of stability that there's something to lean on, something that you can trust in, some sort of home you can return to, that it's not chaos. It's mystery, not chaos.
I feel like that distinction between mystery and chaos is really helpful, because I think in general, and when my husband listens to this episode, he's probably going to laugh out loud when he hears me say this, but like, I really deeply appreciate the mystery in life. The reason I'm in the career field that I work in is because I don't want every single day at my office to look exactly the same. Even when that is challenging to not really know what I'm walking into, or, oh, a client needs something different and it throws off my entire schedule for a day. I would be so bored if I'm not the type of person who could have like a lazy girl job where I just go in every single day and do the exact same thing and leave at the exact same time. And I think I see that in, you know, relationships too. Like, I've been married for just over 4 years. And so I feel like my husband and I right now are very much in this season of trying to suss out, like, what does it look like for us to have mystery and excitement in our relationship when we have gotten to this place? When we celebrated our anniversary this year, we were like, it's only been 4 years. Like, it feels like forever because there is the stability and the comfort. And so how are we seeking out those like opportunities to have adventure or excitement or mystery with one another within the context of our relationship to keep it more engaging, rather than just we come home from work and we cook dinner and we have the same conversation about the same things at work that are bothering us every day. And so we're both in fields where the work we're doing is very engaging. It's very different every single day. We try to keep like our social circles diverse so that we're seeing people who are in lots of different stages of life. And that in of itself too is bringing an element of mystery into our relationship as well as like those other relationships. So I think I struggle similar on the smaller scale. Like, if we said we were going to go do something on Friday at 7 p.m. and then on Friday morning, some other opportunity presents itself and, oh, he's working late, we can't go do this thing anymore. Like, I would say those are the things to me that feel more like that chaos element where it's like, okay, we can still have a structure and a plan and experience mystery within our day-to-day lives that is very like fruitful and healthy and makes just life in general and all relationships, I think, more engaging rather than being plunged into chaos or having all of the mystery removed. Like, if we plan a date night and we're going to go to this new bar or restaurant, again, entering in that little bit of mystery. I know when we're going. I know where we're going. But I can, like, let my brain get that extra dose of dopamine from, I don't know what's on the menu. I don't know what I'm going to eat. I don't know what I'm going to drink. And that can be something exciting to build up our relationship as we have conversation about what we like, what we don't like, without the context of like having expectations.
I love the example that I've done in my life is, let's say you go on a vacation. You're going to be there for 5 days. Two or three of those days, I have planned excursions, things we're going to go see, things we're going to tour, wonderful. 1 to 2 of those days, there are no plans. We're going to find something. There's going to be something that catches our interest when we go to check into the hotel. There's going to be something we hear about while we're there. There's going to be a mystery to some of those days. I've planned it in. So call that a mystery if you want to, whether or not it's planned. But I say, we're going to find something. There's going to be an unknown that we're going to trek through, and that's going to be part of this journey. We're not going to plan a certain day.
There was an element of mystery that happened when my younger sister and my future sister-in-law took a weekend trip together. We went to Duluth, and we explored the Accordion Museum in Superior, Wisconsin. I have not talked to you guys about this. Oh, this is going to be so fun. There was an element of mystery to it in the sense that the Accordion Museum is open from 1 to 3 on Sundays or by request. The website has no information about what is happening.
By request.
By request.
Is there a number I can call and say, can I come see the accordions?
No phone number. Oh. So
you have to fax? How do you get in touch with them?
I don't know.
Bring your husband with you, Lily.
It's a mystery. And so we went to the Accordion Museum, and there's a sign on the door that says, knock or call out to be let in.
Oh, my.
And we all three looked at each other, and we said, if we die, this is worth it. And I promise it was a near-death experience. It was terrifying. We are in the basement of this church. It is floor-to-ceiling accordions. This woman named Linda is sprinting at us from between the shelves to tell us accordion facts. Every time we think she's gone, she's back. Half the things she's telling us we think are probably not true. There's a guard dog barking the entire time, like so loudly. Creepy accordion music is playing from an unknown location.
Wow.
It was
unbelievable. We were dying laughing the entire time, and half of it was from fear and half of it was from like pure delight at what was going on. We all fled the building as soon as Linda turned her back because we were like, we're gonna die here, genuinely. And we all turned and looked at each other as soon as we left, and we were like, that was one of the best moments of my entire life. None of us are ever going back there.
Yeah. Wow. But it was a mystery. We didn't know what was going to happen. And it was, and now it's a wonderful story and a shared trauma bonding experience between the three of us.
Mm-hmm. For sure it is. All right. So we have two more questions or conversations to get into. One about faith, but one just kind of quick one about this. Because I'm realizing as I'm talking or as I'm listening to you talk, and Anna, you said the phrase earlier about doing life in a confident, open-handed way. Mm-hmm. I do know that experience. I do know how to walk through life that way, but it's only the extent to which I feel genuinely or generally safe somehow. Mm-hmm. If I feel safe, then there's sort of this open-handed confidence that I can do life. So here's the question for the table. It doesn't have to be a long answer, but you can expand as much as you'd like. Do you feel, generally speaking, safe in life?
Yes.
Okay. You can expand a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't know if I know how to express it other than just I feel after things that I've been through childhood, early adulthood, the experiences that I've had, that, and my faith certainly is part of this, I believe, that gives me the confidence to feel as though I can approach the day, the week, the rest of my life with a sense of security and understanding that even when really terrible things happen, there is this like bigger meaning or purpose, I guess, behind it that I think animates how I can approach it. Also, having gone through some traumatic experiences earlier in life, I now have gotten through those things, still process and experience them and the grief of them in different ways on different days. But I have the hindsight to look back and say, like, wow, at the time, that felt like the most, I can't imagine, like, life going on after this. I can't imagine having the desire to go on living after this experience. And yet I have made it through seasons like that before, that again, it just like gives that confidence that like in a very unspecific way that gives me the confidence to just say yes in answer to that question, things are going to be generally okay because I have this bigger eternal lens through which I'm learning to look at life and the experiences of my day-to-day or even the things that happen in my relationships. Like as I go through relational trials and difficulties, particularly with female friends in this season of life, I can trust, even when it feels very stressful and very difficult, that it is going to be okay because I have a community of people. I have a husband whom I love and who loves me. I have a secure job financially. I feel secure. Like there's just all these different kind of little elements of it that I think are undergirded by this broader eternal lens that I have learned to look at life.
So what I'm hearing you say is that it doesn't necessarily mean that bad things are not going to happen in your life.
Correct.
But you're finding a sense of safety, not as a result of the circumstances, whether they're bad or good. It's a safety in a bigger story, a bigger meaning that, okay, yeah.
And I would say my answer is really similar to that in the sense that I have a community that I can fall back on. I know that I am really capable to an extent. I have a job that I love. Like there are things that I feel really secure and safe in. I think my answer is coming from a slightly different perspective in the sense that my foundations have not yet truly been rocked in my life. Mm-hmm. And I know that and I'm really aware of that. Mm-hmm. And so there is an element of, yes, I currently feel like everything would be okay, but there is also this voice in the back of my head that is like, but you haven't really experienced anything yet to know that for sure.
Yeah.
And so I would say it's kind of a both and, where I think I do feel very safe and secure in my current life, and there's also an understanding that I don't know how much longer that will last. However, there is an element of faith when I have been through really difficult things, not foundation shaking things, but when I've been through difficult things, I have been able to go into it with confidence and open hands because of my relationship with God and the way that I approach my faith. Hmm. And there's also an element of, and at what point will that continue, or will there be something that happens that will shake that to a point that I lose that?
Yeah. So last question that I would ask, and it just can maybe be a statement at first and then a question, or just maybe some quick response to it. I think it was probably 10 years ago or so, I was reading, I don't remember the name of the book, but I believe Dallas Willard was the author. And I came across a chapter, it was like chapter 5 or 6, and it was subtitled that the universe is ultimately a safe place. And my first reaction was, BS. Yeah. That is not true. But I think the reason why I had the reaction is because I was associating safety, or sort of a durable sense of safety, with the fact that really crappy things happen in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody is going to be subject to really crappy things all the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, of course it's not a safe place. But what Willard went on to tease out was the idea that even if the worst thing should happen to you as a person of faith, God will be there on the other side of it. Mm-hmm. And so It just made me think about, man, am I in a relationship with ideas about God that somehow try to make me feel safe? Or am I actually in a relationship with God, the being God, who there's going to be a fair amount of mystery. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's what the Beaver family says to the children in Chronicles of Narnia when they're like, Aslan's a lion, is he safe? And the beavers say, well, of course he's not safe, but he's good. Mm-hmm. Meaning that they could trust Aslan because he was good, not because their life was going to be safe.
Yeah.
And that, I think, was a fairly big pivot point for me. So just maybe looking for some reactions to that idea that the universe is ultimately a safe place, because even if the worst thing should happen and you die, God is there still, that you just can't, mm-hmm. there's nowhere that God won't be. And I had to make a pivot in my life away from, I feel safe because I think I know things about God. Do I feel safe that I'm going to walk out a life of mystery and unknown, knowing that independent of what happens, God is going to be there?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that ultimate goodness trumps safety, and or my, you know, maybe feeble understanding of safety. So, yeah, I think for me that certainly, like, that eternal lens, it is this deep understanding and knowledge of the goodness of God and of the goodness that can even come from and through really difficult things that we go through in this life. I don't know, Anna, I'm curious your thought, like, as you acknowledge that, you know, you don't have some of those foundation shaking experiences, like what your experience with that is like.
Yeah. I mean, there have been a lot of, especially in the last couple of years, there have been a lot of really massive life decisions that I have had to make that it's been a mystery what is going to happen and when and how and which direction things are going to go. And there are two specific instances that I'm thinking of. And in both of those cases, there has been a lot of peace around it. Mm-hmm. And even I think what's interesting is that that peace has come when I have made a decision. And I'm aware of the fact that I don't understand why that is the decision that I have reached, but I know that it's true. And that has happened only a couple of, like, it's only happened a handful of times where I've had to make a decision about something. I know what my answer is. I don't know why, but I have to stick with that answer. And there is a really strong underlying sense of peace around it. And from there, I know as the years start to unfold, I will start to understand why that was the decision. Yeah.
I'm starting to think maybe we should name this episode "The God of the Dopamine."
I'm not sure horrible.
That's the right. I think that actually diminishes the wonder of God. So I'm going to say that we don't.
Suddenly Horizontal.
I was going to say, place your votes right now.
I think
right
that's
now.
Definitely the name of
but
the episode.
But it's a good second, maybe a subheading.
Just
we'll tell you.
Subtitle, yeah. The God of the Dopamine.
Yeah, I mean, I know you've been around a lot of different blocks with faith journey mm-hmm. stuff. In terms of does the universe feel safe at the end of the day?
Yeah, no. I mean, at the end of the day, my gut reaction right now is no.
Yeah.
It really is. And there's this level of... I mean, I've had that shake where everything kind of goes sideways. I am suddenly horizontal, and everything is different than it was. And
you are such a pro. That was just—I mean, you
it
are
all comes back.
Lily,
it all
Lily, you
goes
and I have
back.
Not segwayed. These two are pros right there.
Thank
all right.
you.
Yes,
but you know, I have had what I believed shaken, and I am still in the process of really I took the slab and I wiped it clean.
Yeah.
And right now there isn't that foundation that I sit back on that no matter what happens, I have this piece. I don't have that. And so right now when things do come along that sort of knock my feet out from underneath me, it's harder to get back up. And I have relationships that I rely on and people that care for me, and I love them. And I love them so much and they fill me with so much joy. But there isn't that underlying peace that I feel I did have at certain points to a degree in my life. It's always been a question that I've never really fully gotten to have a grasp on. It feels like something that's always slipping out of my hand to some degree. And so, you know, I see an overall, like, I feel physically safe. You know, I'm lucky enough to be a tall dude. I can walk around downtown Minneapolis at night and be totally fine. I'm not worried about it. But from a greater perspective of emotional health and a lot of other things that come into life that are so pervasive on how you live your day, there's a lot of question marks.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That would be another topic for another time, by the way, is like just even the difference of men and women walking around in the world in terms of feeling safe, unsafe. It's something that I didn't appreciate at all until I had daughters and what life is like. But yeah, I agreed. At 54, almost 55, and Lily, my foundations have been shaken too. Too long of a story, different time. But I did find that at the end of the day, there you had to redefine what safety looked like and felt like. Otherwise, it is one big destabilizing life that is really difficult to navigate. So thanks for the conversation on this. We'll leave that part of it here, but we do want to wrap every episode with some sort of instance, illustration, experience of the deeper magic, which if you've been listening, you know the deeper magic is a reference from Narnia, and it's the idea that God still has healing energy in the world. There is still good in the world. And Logan, it sounds like you're the one with the story today.
Hey, it's a throwback, totally counter to what I just said, when the world was a lot more sunshiny.
Okay, fair enough.
But I used to be a camp counselor. My favorite service that we put on every night of the week that the kids were there, 5 days, there was a worship service in the evening. And Tuesday nights were faith walk. It was the best night for me because it was just a chance for kids to have a little bit of a worship in the chapel like usual, sure. But after about 10, 15 minutes, we brought them out to the waterfront at 5:30 sunset over a lake in Wisconsin. We told them for the next 30 minutes, there are stations you can go to. You can go pray with a counselor. You can go sit on the shore. You can go listen. But there's going to be a counselor with an acoustic guitar. No talking to your friends for 30 minutes. Talk to God. There is no conversation between your friends. Go pray with a counselor if you need, but just sit and for 30 minutes of silence and music, just talk to God. And of all the experiences I had as a camp counselor, that was always the most profound. Well, there was a week we were getting ready for it, and everything that could go wrong went wrong. It was storming. It was hail. It was disaster. And while we're setting up for it and all of these kids are tracking their muddy boots into the chapel, crammed in there with 200 bodies all sweating, I'm thinking, how in the world is anyone going to experience any kind of God and his power in nature in this dirty, wet, dumb chapel? And so we go through 15 minutes of worship as standard. We think, there's a gazebo kind of across from the chapel that kids can run through the rain to get their feet washed if they want. That'll be great. So we go through it. I step up on the stage and explain to the kids, all right, well, you can go in that corner of the busy chapel to pray with a counselor and that corner of the busy chapel to write something down. And as soon as I dismiss the kids, I finish my speech, I am in such a ball of anger of how badly this is going to be. It's going to be no impact at all. I sit there and I'm talking with the counselors as I dismiss them. And suddenly I turn around and after like 2 minutes, almost the entire chapel has emptied. Every kid went out to the foot washing station at the gazebo. And I find it's because the storm has broken. The sky is the brightest shade of pink you've ever seen, and the most visible rainbow I have ever seen in my entire life is directly above the gazebo. I have never seen a rainbow so close, so large, or so full in image, and it was the moment I dismissed them to go and experience what I thought was going to be the worst faith walk they'd ever have.
Did you feel any sense of conviction? That was such an idiot.
That was the most convicting moment of my spiritual life.
Wow. That's amazing. Great story. Well, on behalf of Logan Liliana, this is Peter, and thanks for listening again to The Deeper Magic. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for joining us on The Deeper Magic. Until our next episode drops, join us on Instagram @DeeperMagicPodcast.